Thanks for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. The Wall Street Journal is reporting at least 67 flights experienced temporary engine shutdowns because of icing problems. This follows recent revelations of maintenance problems at Southwest Airlines and charges that the FAA is dropping the ball when it comes to safety inspections. In this hour, we look at problems in the inspection process, what the FAA is planning to do to resolve them. Here in the studio is Dale Wilbur. He's an aviation reporter for The Washington Post. On the phone from Dallas is Texas Democratic Congresswoman Eddie Bernice Johnson. And from Orlando, Florida, Republican John Mica. Both serve on the House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee. We'll take your calls throughout the hour, 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. Dale Wilbur, if I could start with you. What is this that the Wall Street Journal is reporting this morning about these mid-air engine shutdowns?
Well, it's a fairly long-running issue with the airlines and engine problems that they're having at high altitude. The NTSB identified this as a potential problem back in May of 2006. And they've been working with the industry and the FAA and the airlines and the GE and Pratt & Whitney, who are the engine manufacturers, to find out why engines are shutting down at high altitude. It has to do with weather conditions, ice freezing inside the engines, and causing these temporary paralysis. No commercial jets have failed to restart their engines. We should not scare people. There hasn't been any crashes due to this problem. And so that's where they're at now. I believe the FAA is going to come out with a rulemaking decision today, telling the airlines that they need to do more with their engine de-icing, especially as they're descending to land. That's when the engines idle back and there's not as much thrust being generated, much heat in the engine.
Dale Wilbur, he's aviation reporter for The Washington Post. Congresswoman Johnson, last Thursday, your committee held a hearing on the lax safety inspections. What did you learn from the witnesses?
Well, primarily I learned that there seems to be a little laxity at FAA, and the fact that there seems to be a little bit of a buddy system could very well, I don't believe it has yet, but I think it could very well lead to some unsafe incidences.
What kinds of problems did you hear at the hearing, Congressman Mica?
Well, I heard a system that we put in place that's worked fairly well as far as any major crashes or instances of failure from maintenance. I heard problems with it. Pretty much described by Ms. Johnson, some familiarity, relationships. And I think that one of the good things we learned, the risk-based system that we put in place and self-reporting probably needs a reexamination, and probably we need to improve the system, as the Inspector General recommended, by having an independent check on those that are doing the checking, so that cozy relationship or failure to properly report a problem that we've identified doesn't happen.
Spell out that cozy relationship for us, if you would. I'm not sure we understand exactly what that means.
Well, in some locales, or many locales, you have long-term FAA employees, inspectors, and you have others that work for the airlines, and they develop relationships. It's a natural working relationship. Probably you're familiar with some people with the NPR and work on a routine basis.
Sure.
With them and others have that familiarity. But we have an audit and oversight responsibility, too. So I think that what's lacking is, again, some independent coming in and checking on those that are responsible for the audits and the checks. And I think that was pointed out as a flaw in the current system.
Congressman John Mica, he's Republican of Florida, the ranking member of the House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee. Congresswoman Eddie Bernice Johnson, Democrat of Texas. She's a member of the House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee. Southwest Airlines is also based in her congressional district. We had been told that Nicola Sabatini, associate administrator of the FAA, who testified before the House last Thursday, was going to join us at 10:20 this morning. We've just been informed he has backed out. Dale Wilbur, explain to me what it was that caused the outburst on the part of Chairman Oberstar.
Well, this actually has a long-running issue at Southwest Airlines and the safety inspectors going back to about 2003. We had an inspector named Mr. Boutrous. His first name, Bobby, we'll call him Bobby. I can't pronounce his first name. But Bobby Boutrous was working there for the FAA, and he found some problems with the engines. The way that Southwest Airlines was kind of keeping records of whether they maintained the engines. The engines were perfectly maintained, but there were some discrepancies. He went to his boss and said, hey, I think we should issue a letter of sanction against Southwest Airlines. And he said, no, we don't need to do that. We don't need to issue a sanction letter. Just work with them. Work with them. We'll do something lesser than that. And so he worked with Southwest Airlines. He wanted to ding them for it. Wasn't allowed to. Over the next year, eventually fixed it. He gets a new job. Now we're in 2006, 2007. He gets a new job. And he wants to conduct a wide audit of how Southwest is keeping track of safety directives, which are issued by the FAA and require you to fix things like wires, electronics, systems on the plane, check for cracks, because, you know, these are things that have led to crashes, safety problems. And he had a feeling that, hey, if they weren't keeping track of this stuff very well for the engines, this is all his allegations too, for the engines, then maybe it's the rest of the fleet. Well, he runs into a brick wall, he says. He can't get them to do it, Finally, they say, okay, you can do your audit. Meanwhile, Southwest is going through their records, and they find, oh no, we haven't done critical safety inspections for cracks in 737s, that's their whole fleet, but it was like 47 of their 500 aircraft that need to be done every, I think, 4,000 cycles, which is a takeoff and landing. We fixed this problem. His boss, who is alleged to have this cozy relationship with Southwest Airlines, allowed Southwest to keep flying those jets past the inspection point when they learned they hadn't inspected them like they should have, until they get, you know, cycle them into maintenance bases for the checks and not take them out of service. Then Southwest disclosed another issue they had with rudders. They weren't doing their rudder inspections on time either that next month. And then, you know, Boutrous tried to get his bosses to do something about this. Didn't really go anywhere. They finally launched an investigation. That didn't really seem to go anywhere. Finally, he and another inspector who were upset about this approached Oberstar's investigators in Congress in the Office of Special Counsel. And then this kind of all came out at this hearing. You know, it kind of came out last month, I guess, when the FAA, learning that this stuff was coming out from the hearing, issued a $10.2 million fine against Southwest Airlines for continuing to fly these jets, even though they learned that they shouldn't have been. This all kind of goes back to what Mica was saying, Congressman Mica. Back in the 90s, the FAA was not, you know, they were getting criticized for supervisory role and maintenance issues, like ValueJet when it crashed. The FAA wasn't really in 1996. And so what a lot of these aviation safety experts felt was, what we need to do is a better job of getting the airlines and the FAA to work together. So we need voluntary reporting systems where the FAA or where the airlines would say, hey, listen, we have a problem here. We've discovered a problem. And we're going to fix it. And if they reported it to the FAA before the FAA could learn about it, then and they fixed it, they would not be punished disciplinarily. So pilots, for example, can file reports. Let's say you land on the wrong runway, and no one else would have known you'd done this because it's an airport without tower. You could file a report. It's called an ASAP report. You file a report, say, hey, I made a mistake. And if there's no other way to have learned about it and the FAA didn't learn about it, you are generally not punished. You may be, you know, you're not reprimanded. You may get like some more training. So these programs came out of this era, and it built this relationship between the FAA and the airlines. And a lot of people credit these things with helping make the system much more safe. If you look at the 90s, there were lots of plane crashes. There has been only one major fatal airline crash in the United States in 2001. That was a regional jet where the pilots took off from a runway that was too short for their plane in the pre-dawn darkness in 2007 in Kentucky, and they crashed, killing everyone except the co-pilot.
So what you're saying is, despite this lack of oversight or close or despite the close relationship you see between the FAA and the airlines, there have been no fatal crashes since 2001.
It's like all this safety stuff is coming up in this milieu where the system has never been safer. Now, some argue, like Ken Mead, a former inspector general, and members of Congress, believe the pendulum has shifted too much to cooperation and coziness away from the regulatory. You need, like they argue, you need a carrot and you need a stick. The carrot is you self-report, and what the inspector general found was Southwest was self-reporting and other airlines self-report problems, and then the FAA doesn't go back to make sure they actually fixed it. And so they're using this self-reporting system to get out of trouble. That's what this hearing that the Congress members were at, that's what came out there.
Dale Wilbury, he's aviation reporter for The Washington Post. Congressman John Mica, Republican of Florida, is on the line from Orlando. He's ranking member of the House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee. And Congresswoman Eddie Bernice Johnson, Democrat of Texas, a member of the House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee. Short break. Your calls when we come back. Stay with us. Welcome back. As we talk about airline safety, the relationship between the Federal Aviation Administration and the airlines, which it is supposed to be regulating. Last week, there were hearings in the House. We are having additional hearings coming up this Thursday in the Senate. On the line with me, Congressman John Mica of Florida, Congresswoman Eddie Bernice Johnson of Texas, here in the studio, Dale Wilbur of The Washington Post, and on the line with us is Michael Boyd, an aviation consultant. Good morning to you, Michael. Michael Boyd. All right. I'm sorry. We'll get him a little later. Congresswoman Johnson, do you believe there should be any disciplinary action taken against FAA for allowing Southwest to continue flying aircraft that did not meet safety standards?
Well, It's very difficult to tell. What I think is important is that people are cross-trained so that it won't be the same persons that are building these relationships and going out to be hired by the airlines. I do think that it should not just be ignored, but perhaps people need to be moved around to lessen the possibility of these kind of buddy systems developing.
Are you talking about a revolving door between the FAA and the very airlines which it regulates?
Yes.
And you...
and within the agency, I think that it ought to be enough cross-training that it does not depend on the same few people that do rotate in and out from airline to FAA, FAA to airline, so that nothing will interfere with the inspections if someone has done something or not doing something they should be.
Congressman Mike, how do you feel about that? Do you think that this cross-training would help the situation?
Well, I'm not so much inclined to, say that would solve it. I think a couple things. Chairman Oberstar identified one thing I think we need to do is people moving from FAA directly to one of the airlines, we might need some cooling off period. That starts a relationship that might lead to some questions. Another problem that we have, quite frankly, in the federal government or FAA, it's almost impossible to fire anyone, and sometimes moving people around isn't the answer. I don't know who did what wrong here as far as fact, and that has to be fully investigated. That will be investigated. But if we do find that people acted improperly and put safety at risk and possibly lives at risk, there should be consequences. Those folks should be terminated, not just moved to another position. That's part of the problem we have in the whole federal system. I chaired civil service for 4 years, and I saw people actually elevated after committing egregious things that that should not be tolerated. They should be terminated. So I think that's one of the options that we need to look at. And I support Chairman Oberstar, this little cooling off period that I think we need to impose.
In other agencies, there are cooling off periods of maybe a year, maybe two years. Is there absolutely none between the FAA and the aviation industry?
I don't know that there is any.
I suggested 2 years on Thursday that to be considered before the hiring can...
Of course, Dale Wilbur, you had Southwest Executive Chair Herbert Kelleher arguing that regulatory noncompliance and being unsafe are two very different things. Do you agree?
Well, in this case, aviation, as we just said, is going through the safest period in history. I'm a pilot myself, and to get my pilot's license, I'll tell you, was about 4,000 times harder than getting my driver's license. Every time you get into an airplane, you have to do an extensive check. There are all these checks and balances on it. The system is founded on safety. But you still need, you know, a tough regulatory agency to ensure that people follow the rules. And, you know, if you're not following, if you start letting, I think the concern in the industry is if you start letting certain things slip, then you know, we're in a, nothing will go wrong. This is where everything's so safe, it's perfect, then something bad could happen. And so I think that's where, right now, that's what people are concerned about.
And, of course, Southwest is not alone in terms of the violations. The FAA also said four other airlines are under investigation. Why doesn't the FAA name those airlines?
Well, they say it's because they're under investigation right now and they shouldn't do it. But they've come under intense fire from members of Congress and safety experts for not revealing the names of those airlines.
Congressman Micah, do you expect that to happen?
Well, it's really up to FAA. I'd rather they disclose it, but if there are pending investigations, we don't want to jeopardize them. But the good thing, too, is that when you have an incident like this, it's definitely a wake-up call. We've also seen FAA going back, checking or re-auditing records and making sure I's are dotted and T's are crossed. And that's the way the system should be working all the time. But I think that the big thing we found here is, and the IG recommended, is we're going to have somebody check the checker, so to speak.
Do you agree with that, Dale Wilbur?
I think a lot of safety experts agree with that I've talked to. They think that right now they're relying too much on the people, the inspectors. The system is, like, for example, United Airlines, they have dozens of people in charge of quality assurance. Their whole job is to make sure the systems work. They have maybe a dozen or so inspectors. Those inspectors, you shouldn't give the public the impression those inspectors are going out and checking every bolt on every plane and overseeing the maintenance on every jet. They're basically in charge of the systems, making sure that the things these airlines have established that they are following the rules, but it's up to the airlines to follow the rules. And so it's difficult, but at the same time, for example, in the Southwest case, a guy who worked for Gawazinski, that's his name, the inspector who was alleged to have the cozy relationship, one of his buddies went to work for Southwest, and 2 weeks later, he was in charge of the liaison. He was in charge of the liaisoning between Southwest and the FAA. And so that's where some of the allegations are, that his buddy was there and they were helping each other out. And at one point, there was an allegation that this guy had an internal document from the FAA that he knew what the inspectors were doing. And so I think, you know, they're probably, the safety experts I talked to said it probably wouldn't be a bad idea to have some other group of guys or women out there, inspectors, checking to make sure the inspectors are following what the protocols that they're supposed to.
Congresswoman Johnson, do you think this goes far beyond Southwest and is, in fact, a systemic problem?
Yes, I do, because with Southwest, they were the ones that called it to the attention of FAA. And I believe that the persons who are the experts that go out probably are assuming that the airlines would favor them doing it rather than making sure that it is not allowed to slip. I don't believe that any of the conditions, from what I understand, made it unsafe, but to continue for this to happen certainly can cause that to happen, to be unsafe. And I'm very concerned about that. I'm also very concerned that FAA is not moving people to the point where these buddy systems don't get a little bit too cozy. Because I think that eventually it's clear that they were not necessarily unsafe conditions, because there's nothing, no incidents that have happened.
Dale Wilbur, take us through this inspection process. What did they actually inspecting?
Well, they rely a lot on internal records from the airlines. The airlines have these databases they input stuff into, you know, whether they're complying with directives that the, you know, each engine component probably has to go through an airworthiness directive, which is a safety directive check. And they input, yes, we did this check on this date. And they use those databases to ferret out if airlines are keeping up with this stuff. But they also, you know, do spot on inspections. They go in and say, well, let's make sure that the airlines are, you know, they did change the wire bundling on this kind of plane because we knew it led to fires in the past. And they go inspect a couple jets when they're in heavy maintenance.
Congressman Johnson, Congresswoman Johnson, I know you have to leave us. Let me ask you one final question. You said you had proposed a 2-year separation between when someone leaves the FAA and goes to the industry. How much chance do you think that has for an action?
I have no idea. I think it probably might be slim, because the expertise might wane a bit before they go. But I think that I have not come up with what I consider to be the remedy, except to make sure that the individuals are true to their responsibility in making the inspections. I also think that when the inspections are being made, it probably is not wise to make them that public unless there is a problem, because people are very leery now of safety, and the airlines are teetering on bankruptcy, except, I guess, for Southwest, and the ridership could be affected. I would hate to have just a false alarm But at the same time, people that are in these positions need to take an oath or something to make sure that they are very honest with these inspections and to actually do them. If this is not necessary, then what they need to do is only require what's necessary.
Dale Wilbur, you had a comment.
No, I think a lot of this, what's interesting about all this is the politics involved. And she mentioned the inspectors. Well, 44% of the inspectors are due to retire by 2010, the way they were hired and their age and their time on the job. And so a lot of them will be leaving the workplace in the next few years anyway. Where do you go if you're an FAA inspector? What kind of expertise do you have besides becoming a mechanic at a small airfield working on, you know, Cessnas? You want to go with the airlines, right? So there will be more of this going on. And the airlines also right now are battling their unions for outsourcing of maintenance. These 68% or 64% of airline maintenance, I believe, is now outsourced.
Congresswoman Johnson, I want to thank you so much for joining us this morning. Perhaps she's already gone, Congresswoman Eddie Bernice Johnson, Democrat of Texas. She is a member of the House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee. At 27 before the hour, you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. We've got lots of callers, but before we go to the phones, we're joined now by Michael Boyd, who is an aviation consultant. Good morning to you, Michael. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Happy Monday.
Thank you. One of the things that came out of last week's hearings was the fact that the FAA is way behind in its inspections. Why is this?
Well, the FAA is the major problem. I mean, how would you feel if you knew that an FAA inspector said an airline should be shut down, his boss said you should bury the report, and the airline went on to kill people? That happened with ValueJet. So what we have here is an understaffed agency, and we have an agency that at the top is very often run by political appointees who really don't understand the business.
Congressman Mike, what's your response?
Well, I became chairman of the Aviation Subcommittee in 2001, and for about 3 years I referred to FAA as a totally dysfunctional agency. I think some of the criticisms Mr. Boyd has made are correct. We've tried, first we tried to separate out some of the administrative responsibilities by creating a position of chief operating officer, which took over 2-3 years to create and actually fill. We've had one, and he's gone. He tried to put in a business regimen. You do have very highly unionized workforce. You have an aging workforce. You have political appointees, as pointed out. We had, since I've been on the committee 15 years, at one point, we had five administrators in a very brief period of time, and then we had vacancies. We haven't had a confirmed administrator by the Senate since last September, and we've got two Democrat members now holding up confirmation, holding hostage the appointee. So we have an agency that, by its nature, is somewhat dysfunctional.
Congressman Micah, how important do you regard this issue to be? I understand you've got a lot on your plate as a representative from the state of Florida, but you sound very laid back about the whole thing. And
well,
I just...
you try to take them, you know, and first, I try to change the agency and the culture. That's difficult, but we're trying to do that. But I've got to have even when you have an FAA administrator, it's tough enough to get things done, let alone one being held hostage right now. So that makes it almost impossible. But you look at fundamentals. For example, you described the current problem of the engine shutdowns and the NTSB recommendation, National Safety Transportation Board. I found one of the things is in the past, recommendations were made by NTSB. They were offered up to FAA, and then nothing was done, and it was dropped. We did change the law where they have to keep reporting back to Congress and to FAA to make certain, until the problem is resolved. So you take each part of this and you try to put in place pieces that will improve it.
Well, of course, CNN is reporting that flyers' complaints are up 60%.
It's going to get worse.
And I'm sure, and now that you've heard this testimony from various witnesses, the question becomes what the next steps are that Congress will take. We've got to take a short break here. And when we come back, we will open the phones, 800-433-8850.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, helping to build a more just future for the nation and the world at macfound.org. By the Annenberg Foundation, advancing public well-being through improved communication, on the web at annenbergfoundation.org. And by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, supporting Games for Health, using video games to promote health innovations, at rwjf.org/pioneer. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Former Chief UN Weapons Inspector Hans Blix says the world is sleepwalking toward another nuclear arms race. He offers steps necessary to reduce the global nuclear arsenal and how to remove the threat of weapons of mass destruction falling into the wrong hands. The Diane Rehm Show, next hour. We're back, and it's time to open the phones as we talk about the relationship between the Federal Aviation Administration and the airlines it regulates. Let's go first to Westmoreland, New Hampshire. Good morning, Ellen. You're on the air.
Good morning, Diane. Thank you all for this show.
Sure.
I think. I'm actually scheduled to fly on Southwest on Friday to Philadelphia, so I just have a bottom-line question. Is safety still quite the concern at this point, and would your guests fly on Southwest?
Dale.
Yeah, I'd fly South. I would fly Southwest. I have no...
I would as well.
I think that what's really interesting about this whole safety... This is the safest period in U.S. aviation, U.S. history, and it's not an accident, right? There are 14,000 takeoffs a day in commercial aviation, maybe some more, 15,000 a day. You start adding up the math, and there's only been one commercial fatal jet crash that killed passengers. Southwest had an accident where they overran a runway in 2005 and killed a passenger in a car, not even on the airplane. And why is this? Because the planes are better. Technology is better. There are more redundancies. Things that go wrong don't take out an airplane anymore. Like, for example, window panes crack. Well, they have like four different layers of window panes on some of these jets. Pilot training is far better. They're all taught like In 2000, Alaska Airlines plane crashed that had a jack screw problem in the horizontal stabilizer. The pilots kept trying to fix the problem in the air. They're not taught that anymore. They have smoke in the cockpit, some other problems, to get it on the ground. And so you start adding up all these different things, from the technology to the airlines. The airlines don't want to lose a plane. The pilots are very well trained. They've learned from past crashes. Two of the worst kinds of crashes were midair, the worst one was controlled flight into terrain. They put computer boxes on planes that warn pilots way in advance that they're about to crash into a mountain because of GPS technology. So you start eliminating all those crashes, your safety record's going to improve no matter what.
All right. Here's an email from Catherine in Grand Forks, North Dakota, who says the Republican congressman characterized a cozy relationship in which lower-ranking FAA inspectors are personally close with airline personnel. In fact, it was FAA inspectors who were the whistleblowers and who stated that their reports of safety violations were buried and overruled by the politically appointed managers at FAA. Congressman Micah.
Well, I don't know any of the inspectors that are politically appointed.
I wonder if she's talking about and overruled by the politically appointed managers.
No idea what he's talking about.
Diane, can I just...
Sure,
can I
Michael.
Jump in there?
Go ahead.
Well, you know, first of all, those two inspectors who whistleblowed, there is no whistleblower protection. The government says there is, but the minute they leave that room, retribution starts. It's happened with people at the FAA before and the TSA. They get up in a back room and their careers are over. So we owe them a lot of thanks for what they've done. But the real issue is, like I said, ValueJet killed people, and the FAA knew it was unsafe. The FAA inspector who said shut it down said at the NTSB hearings he was told to bury his report. Now, here we go 18 years later, 14 years later, and nothing's been done. The same system is there. We have an FAA administrator who basically lied and said, well, we have all our upgrades to the air traffic control system are on time. That's not true. But the system that's in place here has to be changed. It can't be changed overnight. But the tolerance of these kind of failures, they have to stop.
Dale Boyd. Sorry, Dale Wilbur.
No, it's confusing. He raises a really great point in all this, and that the FAA probably, according to safety experts, needs to do a tougher job overseeing these airlines. In this case, what's really interesting is that the inspector, the supervisor alleged to have been involved in this cover-up and cozy relationship, kept bragging about how close a relationship he had to top guys in the FAA, like Nick Sabatini. He was telling the guys that he was a buddy with him. Nick was going to be on the show and stuff like that. We don't know if that's true. I think Sabatini said he didn't really know the guy. But it as the message filters down, that the FAA has taken on, we're going to call the airlines customers and clients. I've heard this before. There are customers who want to serve them and everything. As this message gets filtered down to the line troops, they interpret that in their own way. Oh, we got to be nice to the airlines. We have to help them fix their problems. We're not going to hit them hard. And that may be more of a cultural issue, according to safety experts I've spoken to, than a manpower issue or a structural issue.
Let's go now to Cincinnati, Ohio. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning, Diane. I'm an airline pilot, work for a major legacy carrier. And just a couple of things. One is sort of anecdotal. This didn't happen to me specifically, but it happened to a friend of mine. I had an FAA inspector on the airplane riding in the cockpit with them, and the inspector told him that they have two sets of standards, one for the legacy carriers or the major carriers, and another for the low-cost startup operations. And if something is well, some things are sometimes overlooked, shall we say, at the low-cost and startup-type carriers. And this is a part of the problem is the dual mandate of the Federal Aviation Administration, and that is that the FAA is not only a regulator but also promotes the aviation and the airline industry. And so with the emphasis on competition subsequent to deregulation, the airlines, the startup airlines, are being helped by the government, while the legacy carriers are simply being encouraged to exist. And this is all in the interest of competition.
That's an interesting point. Michael Boyd, what role, if any, do low-cost passengers, passenger carriers bear? Are they cutting corners on safety inspections in order to keep their costs low? And is there a differentiation between the larger industrial airlines and the low cost?
No, not at all. I mean, Frontier Airlines, for example, consistently has gotten awards for the quality of its maintenance, and they're a, quote, low-cost, unquote, carrier. I wouldn't worry too much about that. I believe, however, the FAA's dual mandate was ended, you know, about 10 years ago, where they have to promote aviation. Not that that means a whole lot. But the bottom line of it is the oversight at all these carriers is weak. I'm very concerned about outsourced maintenance to places where people don't speak English, but the manuals are in English. So we have a long way to go, but I wouldn't differentiate between, say, a low-cost carrier and a legacy carrier. U.S. carriers try to be safe. It's the oversight we need to look at.
All right. Let's go now to St. Augustine, Florida. Good morning, Alan. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Diane. I want to thank you so much for airing this issue. It's, as a sort of an outsider, but yet an insider, I've been an aircraft mechanic for many years with a major airline, and it's a serious thing. It's both the lax, and as you refer to it, as they refer to it, as the cozy relationship as far as inspectors and the airline goes. But my largest sore spot is, like the previous gentleman mentioned, is the outsourced maintenance. And I feel exactly the way he does that. As far as I'm concerned, and what I saw through many years, like 39 years with a major airline, in-house maintenance, the airlines have more control over. As far as I'm concerned, it's a more, it's a better source of maintenance on these aircraft than outsourcing to some country, like the other gentleman said.
Interesting deal.
Well, you know, that a lot of people raise it as a safety issue. Members of Congress have. The DOTIG, Inspector General, has raised that in reports. But again, as the airlines have outsourced more maintenance during their worst economic upheaval in their history, the safety record only improved. And so their argument is, we outsource maintenance to bases that work on not just our fleet, but other fleets of planes. They learn about these other aircraft and stuff. But Mike Boyd raised a good point, and when you start outsourcing maintenance to other countries, it's very difficult, I think. I think the FAA has an office in Singapore, for example, yet they're responsible in that office for ensuring that outsourced maintenance throughout Asia, which some U.S. carriers use, is done appropriately. And so it makes another hurdle.
What about the unions and how they figure into this deal?
Well, they don't want it to be outsourced, these maintenance workers, of course, because they lose their jobs then as the airlines try to contain costs and bid this stuff out. And so that's part of there's a whole political dynamic here, too, where, you know, the Democrats are pro-labor. You know, they've really supported the Air Traffic Controllers Union, for example. And, you know, that's part of this whole debate, too. You got to filter all that out.
All right. To Petersville, Maryland. Good morning, Lou. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. I'm listening to Ms. Johnson and Mr. Mike as our congresspersons. And as you pointed out, Diane, they seem to be rather laid back about this. I mean, we'll all remember the Brownie, you're doing a good job situation, and the first people that ought to go on this one is that supervisor that this fellow Boutros spoke to, and that supervisor who failed to act on his report. That fellow should be gone, and Mr. Boutros should be promoted into his job. We all know the FCC has had problems. We just had Mr., I believe, Johnson from HUD disappear. The FDA has had problems, the Interior Department with its oil leasing pricing, and we also know Environmental Protection and the General Service Administration all have had problems. Mr. Mike has been in his job for the last 6 years or whatever it is, and it just gives evidence to us taxpayers out here as to the failure of the Republican Party to make these agencies actually work efficiently.
Congressman Mike, do you want to respond?
Well, nothing could be further from the truth. I inherited a totally dysfunctional agency. We put in some mechanisms. You have to understand everything we did as far as reforms have been fought constantly. Again, trying to get a chief operating officer position in place, put in place a business plan, try to get rid of the administrative overhead in the agency. And some of that has been done. Part of what we should be looking at, too, with the inspection process is how many people we have in it. It's over 7,000, 3,800 inspectors. For 7,000 large commercial aircraft and maybe 19,000, we've got a huge retirement rate, as you heard. Replacing those people are important. Putting some of those necessary changes in place, getting trained personnel up and ready because of the heavy retirement that we expect.
So, Dale Wilbur, talk for just one moment about this whole question of replacing the person at the top.
Bobby Sturgill.
Yeah.
Again, I've had no FAA administrator, and Sturgill has been under attack. He's under attack from two Democrat members who are holding him up primarily because of the airspace redesign. Well, the airspace redesign in New York City is their beef. 70% of my delays in the system are trying to change out airspace redesign in New York. That's where the delays are. That's been over 10 years since we started doing this redesign. Now they're holding him up, so you're not going to get any change in delays, and you've got an intimidated acting administrator over all the programs. It's ridiculous, and the gentleman's comments were ridiculous.
At 7 minutes before the hour, you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. You know, I do think that sometimes it's difficult to hear from listeners and consumers directly. I don't think many comments are ridiculous. I do believe that sometimes you have people expressing their frustration, Congressman
Micah.
Well,
they do, but they need to get the facts. And the facts are that we had a revolving door as far as an FAA administrator, and we've returned to that. We had over five administrators in a short period of time at a vacancy. We created a position that transcends presidential term.
And Dale Wilbur, that's where I want to ask you about why the holdup from the Democrats of confirming someone new.
Well, he would get a five-year term, and if the Democrats believe that their two candidates will win, one of their two candidates will win in November, they're going to be stuck with this FAA administrator who's a Republican appointee. You know, they could probably get him out of the job by making him come to the White House at 4 a.m. every day to deliver a briefing to some empty room. But, you know, I don't think that's how it works.
All right. Let's go to Fort Worth, Texas. Good morning, Linda.
Good morning. I just had a comment. This is very interesting. My husband has worked in aviation, commercial aviation, for about 25 years now. I think something that needs to be looked at, in addition, to me it goes hand in hand, is the fact that the majors are now starting to restructure to cut costs because fuel costs are up there. But what they have chosen to do is take all of their senior maintenance people and turn them out on the street.
Michael Boyd, do you want to comment?
Well, you know, there is an issue with that kind of turnover you have in the airline business, and I have to agree. I don't think outsourcing to other countries necessarily makes any sense. But restructuring is restructuring, and I can't really pass on that. Having worked for maintenance labor unions, I have maybe a slight bias on why we should keep it here.
Are you confident, Michael, that the Congress, the administration, is going to take necessary steps to restore public confidence?
Oh, absolutely not. No confidence whatsoever. We had a cover-up at ValueJet. No one got fired. In this case, the appointee, Mr. Sturgill, has, in my mind, behaved disgracefully. Instead of standing up, which he could have, and said, I'm going to clean up Dodge City, he's trying to act like everything's fine by saying, there were 10.2 million reasons why we like safety or why we are demanding safety from Southwest, i.e. the fine. So I'm not really happy with that. But let me give one more point here. This stuff where it's all Republican. Remember, ValueJet, we had a Democrat administration that said ValueJet was safe. As a matter of fact, we had a DOT secretary who stood on the crash site and assured us it was safe when it wasn't.
Aviation.
So we have a bipartisan issue here, not just Republican.
Aviation consultant Michael Boyd, Congressman John Mica of Florida, Del Wilbury, he's an aviation reporter for The Washington Post. Thank you all so much for joining us. And thanks for listening, everyone. I'm Diane Rehm.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkard, Nancy Robertson, Jonathan Smith, Tanya Weinberg, and Emmanuel Tui. The engineer is Toby Schreiner. Dori Anisman answers the phones. Visit drshow.org for audio archives and CD sales, transcripts from SoftScribe, and podcasts. Call 202-885-1200 for more information. Our email address is drshow@wamu.org. This program comes to you from American University in Washington. This is NPR, National Public Radio.